Welcome to Churches Changing Podcast. I'm your host, Beth Estock, and today I have the pleasure to talk with Dustin Mailman, who leads a coffee roasting Fresh Expressions network, employing folks with criminal backgrounds, anchored at Trinity UMC in West Asheville, North Carolina. And as an added bonus, Ellison Martin is with us today as well. Dustin, take it away and introduce us to Ellison.
Yeah. Hey, y'all. I'm Dustin Mailman. You know, Beth summarized what I do pretty well. I am the founding pastor of Deep Time, which is a network of social enterprises and fresh expressions that the Western North Carolina Conference of the United Methodist Church has given me the privilege of leading. We've started off with coffee roasting, but we have visions of tattoo shops that specialize in cover-ups and removals. We have visions of a book publishing wing. We have visions of a hip-hop studio. We have lots of vision, but the undergirding mission that we abide in is celebrating, employing, and creating spiritual community with people impacted by incarceration. So this isn't just a second chance job opportunity. This is creating spiritual community with folks. This is creating disciples for the transformation of the world. We take that calling seriously. So my counterpart, his name's Timothy Underwood. We're just celebrating 1 year from release from a 16-year bid. He is a preacher. He's one of the best preachers I've ever heard in my life. He's been holding the fort down while I've been away on paternity leave. So he's been preaching. Many of y'all might have met him at the Fresh Expressions National Gathering. And it's just been the joy of my life to be able to be in solidarity with the poor, with the captive, to take the calling of Jesus seriously.
Well, and can you introduce us to who you're holding right now, just so folks know when there's some little baby sounds, who's in the building with us?
Yeah, so Ellison Martin is here and ready to be interviewed on this podcast as well. Ellison is just under a month old. He is named after Gregory Ellison, who is the pastoral care professor at Emory University. He's a dear mentor of mine, but I'm glad y'all got to welcome him as well on this podcast today.
And Ellison is not even a month old yet, is he?
He is not. So he turns a month old in 2 days.
So we are so grateful, Dustin, that you're taking a little bit of time from your paternity leave and your deep love of caring for this little one that's come into the world to talk with us today. And Ellison, if you have anything that you want to add to what your dad has already said, just let us know. Yeah. So how did you come about creating Deep Time, Dustin?
Yeah, so I grew up in South Florida with a mom who had a variety of jobs until she ended up working for a foundation that mostly offers loans and housing for folks who are low income in Belgrade, Florida. And then my dad, who is a deputy sheriff in Martin County, Florida. It's through their commitment to service and looking out for folks who are struggling that I got to have a vision of what ministry looks like without knowing that it's ministry. You know, there's this memory that stands out sitting around the dinner table with my dad and mom and my brother, Brandon. And we were at Carrabba's and all of a sudden we got appetizers comped for us. And as the waiter walked up to the table, he approached my dad saying, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me, but you're one of the folks who showed me a little bit of dignity while I was incarcerated. I've really turned my life around. This is how I want to say thank you." So,
wow.
You know, I still have my critiques of all the systems, but there's these little glimpses of what how far a little bit of dignity goes. I didn't grow up in the church. I didn't even consider a calling to ministry until my senior year in high school after working at a summer camp in Western North Carolina called Camp Tocoa. It's through there that I just came alive, spending time with homesick campers, running wilds all throughout the woods of Pisgah National Forest, scrubbing the grits out of the bottom of the pots in the kitchen, just having that full experience. It just turned my world upside down. It led me to go to undergrad at Appalachian State, you know, moved way far away from Florida. And it's through that connection at Camp Tocoa, I met Brian Combs, who's the founding pastor of Haywood Street Congregation, which is a congregation that's specifically in relationship with folks on the streets in Asheville, North Carolina. And it's through Camp Tocoa and Haywood Street Congregation that I began to just ponder really seriously the impact that church outside of the box has for this goal of making disciples for the transformation of the world. It wasn't stained glass windows that lured me into the church. It was coming alive through having counselors who believed in me and being able to be a counselor who believed in me through sleeping under bridges in Asheville and having folks look out for me in the soup line saying where the good food at and where the food that'll get you sick is at. So through that, I stumbled into King Street Church while I was an undergrad. Luke Edwards is a dear mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through King Street Church that I really got to see just this picture of church that just ran so contrary to what my mind had created a caricature out of. You know, we were in the county jail, and the folks with the most heinous crimes were the ones who were praying for Luke and I every single week. It wasn't a surface level, oh yeah, I'll pray for you. It was a weekly follow-up. Hey, you mentioned this. How's this going? I never experienced anything like that. Again, I didn't grow up in church. And then we were in the shelter, and I got to see what grassroots lay leadership really looks like. We had folks who would sit in that circle in that fresh expression every single week, get into housing and start making meals for the community and leading the group. And it was just, it stirred me. And through that time, I ended up applying to a couple different seminaries. I did end up going to the right one, Candler School of Theology. I'll emphasize that, the right one.
Yes, I am a graduate of Candler too. Woo-hoo!
But it was through my time at Candler, I learned of base ecclesial communities, and I learned of Fellowship Church, which the mighty Howard Washington Thurman founded, who's just a critical spiritual leader and luminary in my life. That's where I learned about the Foundry. You want to hear about Wesley and his strangely warmed heart, but you never hear about the Foundry as this hub for social enterprise in the 1800s. Just remarkable. So I chewed on these ideas. I studied mysticism. I studied coffee supply chains. I studied the Salvadoran martyrs. I grew enamored with James Cone and Dorothy Day and Dorothy Zola and M. Sean Copeland and just all these giants. And I got to take seriously what it means to faithfully move through the world. I feel like a lot of my peers were starting with this kind of theoretical foundation, and then they had to figure out how to enflesh it. I had all that flesh, but I didn't have that theory. So I found myself at an advantage saying, whoa, like my peers' worlds are being rocked, but this is church. This is church. So I chewed on this idea. I got to intern at Haywood Street for another summer. I worked on the NICU and the neurology floor of Grady Memorial Hospital at the height of the COVID pandemic. Grady's where I had my first baptism, and I witnessed post-baptism breath entering the life of a baby again. Just, you know, the kind of stuff that brings you down to your knees.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just so deeply formed by my time in seminary, by my time with King Street Church, by my time with Haywood Street Congregation, that in a lot of ways, I didn't feel like the Methodist Church knew what to do with me. I was formed by all these things that were considered new, that were considered kind of cutting edge. And I consider myself one of those folks who are kind of on that first wave of the fruit of fresh expressions and missional congregations and camping ministries, campus ministry and undergrad. You know, all those apportionment dollars formed, you know, pastors like me. That's kind of where the base level starts on a little bit of a higher level. After seminary, I felt so called to Asheville, specifically the streets of Asheville. My wife and I both, who's a pastor as well. And I just continued to listen for what God called me to, but those opportunities are limited. There wasn't the opportunity at Haywood Street for me to step in and be appointed there. other churches in Asheville were looking for a little bit more CPR than what someone who's called to urban ministry would be willing to do. So I ended up doing a little bit of chaplaincy at the VA until I found this pinhole opportunity to be the minister of families and mission at Trinity United Methodist. It was, again, this is 2021, so we're starting to see the pandemic wane some, and there's this opportunity, and, you know, missions pastors' opportunities seem more and more rare, especially post-schism or shatter, whatever we want to call it, and this just seemed like a beautiful opportunity to step into ministry in a context that I'm called to, and if it's... Mm-hmm. If I get to do mission, that's even better. I knew working with kids would be wonderful too, but mission is what drew me to that position. And it's through there I stepped into Trinity as a winter shelter was happening. So in Asheville, there's this protocol called Code Purple, which is when it's under 32 degrees, these unconventional spaces open up to shelter folks who are on the streets. I could just not believe that the church I was stepping into wanted to be a shelter. It was amazing. And, you know, there was mixed reception by the congregation, but we were able to be innovative and do a winter shelter rather than a Code Purple shelter. So Code Purple was just when it's below 32, but winter shelter is open every single night. When I was there, it was from January 4th to March 31st. So high access, which means anyone and everyone can come in. It was just remarkable. And when that ended, I continued to find myself just pondering, what's next? You know, March 31st came and there wasn't a ton of follow-up. There wasn't many more opportunities to be in that kind of work in the context of Trinity. There was a lot of repair work that had to be done in the congregation too, and still is being done in the congregation. And this is where I just began to really chew on just the interrelated realities of homelessness, and specifically Jesus's call to solidarity with the poor. It's not a negotiable for Jesus. To be a Christian is to be in radical solidarity with the poor. So I began to see these little glimpses where folks would be starting to do well. They would get clean, they would get a job, they would get on the housing voucher list, and then an old warrant would creep up, and they didn't have the infrastructure for it to support, and then relapse and recidivism and, you know, a losing of self, that ladder that they've climbed all of a sudden gets snatched out from underneath them.
Yeah, a sense of real hopelessness.
Yeah, why would you find hope? Why would you want,
right.
Why would you want to lean on church when you don't know where your next meal's coming from? This is where, you know, this is why those Wednesday night suppers. I recently read an article about how Wednesday night suppers could help keep the church alive because folks are hungry right now.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense. It's that easy. And what an easy opportunity to invite people to the gospel feasts by giving real food. And the through line that I saw is that folks didn't have sojourners. They had resources that were available 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, but they didn't have anyone to call when they're crying. And they didn't have anyone to say, hey, like, I think my kids are going to be taken. Like, what can I do? You know, they had a job, but it wasn't well paying and it wasn't meaningful. There wasn't formation that was happening. This was just getting off the streets so they don't have to bear the mark of shame for being unhoused. So the more I got to be in a relationship with folks on the streets, the more I came to learn that many folks have this kind of stamp of incarceration, and that incarceration hasn't been rehabilitative to these folks who are in my community. Like, in fact, there's a never-ending cycle of recidivism. And in Buncombe County, 49% of people who transition from incarceration return within 3 years. I mean, it's 49%, but why don't we just call a spade a spade? And that's 50% of people. That's half.
Yeah.
That's half the county that goes back to incarceration, be it jail or prison or whatever in between. So in the earliest stages of deep time, it was the question we continue to ask was, how do we stand in this gap? How do we build bridges in these intersections that Walter Fluker calls intersections where worlds collide, you know, where the personal becomes public. And it's from there that we saw a living wage job, a opportunity to be in a spiritual community to where you are authentically allowed to be yourself, carrying everything that comes with having a record or having impermanent housing or struggling with substance abuse disorder or struggling with mental illness. And then also just what's it mean to celebrate the reality that we're created in the image of God, and that alone makes us good. It might not be great, but the bottom line is we're good. And it was from chewing on this and lots of conversations with my senior pastor, with my district superintendent. We began to kind of mold and shape this. I got to go out to Homeboy Industries in California 2 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, who Gregory Boyle is the, you know, he wrote the playbook, and to sit at his feet. And I'll be going again, but this time I'll have the whole Deep Time team coming too this coming August. It's just been remarkable. We've been running since July 1st. When I say running, it means we've launched a roasting business. We have 6 employees currently. One of them, it has someone who stepped into a ministerial role, Timothy Underwood, who I mentioned earlier, is in a ministerial role. We have presence in the local county jail on the holding unit for folks who are awaiting trial and likely to go to prison. We're building relationships with service providers in the area through that ministry, that Fresh Expression in the jail. We have a Fresh Expression for folks who are exploring faith and are new to recovery. Second Tuesday of every month, we have this Fresh Expression to where it's just a ragtag conversation. We drink some good coffee, eat some good pastries, and then we begin to explore how God might be using us for good. And then we have a therapeutic art space, which is led by one of my just heroes. His name's Joe Robb. He's a folk artist, and in my eyes, he's just one of the most incredible artists I've ever encountered. And if it wasn't for his record and housing history, his stuff would be at the Met. He is just remarkable. So we have these little pockets of Fresh Expressions. We have this coffee roasting social enterprise. And we also go and we are preaching all around our conference. And we think through the Fresh Expressions conference, we might be able to go to other parts of the country too, which we're excited. We're trying hard to preach at a Methodist church in LA whenever we go out to Homeboy Industries. So
nice.
We really want to lean into what it means to be connectional. Connectionalism in our tradition is not just about, you know, like high fives and email chains. It is about like being in the work together.
Well, I could see by your own shaping and forming, Dustin, that, you know, the mentors that you've had have been a lived out expression of that connectionalism.
Undoubtedly. Yeah.
So I could see how you want to continue to embody that for other people and for the next generation as you hold your little boy there.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's no incident that his name is Ellison. Dr. Greg Ellison really offered a lot of the theological framework for Deep Time. Fearless Dialogues invites folks to stop, don't jump to change, stop and pay attention. Listen for the voices that have been silenced. See what gifts are in our presence, and then move to change. And it's through this Fearless Dialogues, you know, formula that I've been able to take seriously Howard Thurman's call to actualizing community. And, you know, for Thurman, community is salvation. And when I hear Methodists talk about entire sanctification isn't just personal. It is collective.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are only saved in community. So this work of Deep Time, it's about connecting with folks who are on the underside of history, on the underside of community, and showing the world the goodness that God placed in them as they were born.
It sounds like, I mean, you've been at this for just a year, but it sounds like the Holy Spirit has been like putting you on the express train here. Like things have been happening quickly.
Yes. And you know, that's where, you know, the best the best practitioners of connectionalism have not been Methodists in my experience. It's been grassroots agnostic organizers.
So let's talk a little bit. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that because I'm curious.
Yeah.
On your website, you have a bunch of partners that are listed, and I am a firm believer that ministry now and into the future is all about partnering.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with, you know, what flavor of religion are you, or do you have a religion at all? It's like, where are you going? What is your passion? How can we work together? How can magic kind of happen if we did partner? So tell us a little bit about that journey and why that's important to you.
Yeah. So if you look on our website, we list our partners on purpose. You'll see a lot of nonprofits do that, kind of to name who's funded them. But for us, it's more about who is committed to journeying with us. So everything from charter fishing business to, you know, Raw Tools that a lot of folks know about from Philadelphia, what Shane Claiborne leads, they're involved with us. Haywood Street Congregation's involved with us. First United Methodist Church Hendersonville, all the way to Invested Faith. And it's these communities that have seen the spark of the goodness that, again, is has been there from the beginning of time within each of us. And it's through what my friend Dan has introduced me to. It's called network weaving. Again, for folks who aren't religious, it's just connectionalism. But it's about what's it mean to actually be at the table together and realize there's enough pie for all of us.
Yes.
So, you know, deep time doesn't happen in the echo chamber. And this is what's been most critical. We partner with Emoja Health, Wellness, and Justice Collaborative, which is a Black-centered healing community, which Trinity United Methodist has now partnered with and has their after-school program within the building. We partner with Operation Gateway, which in my eyes is the premier reentry organization in all of Western North Carolina. That's led by Philip Cooper. We partner with an organization called Go Places, which works with displaced workers, so people who haven't had employment in at least a year. And this specifically is for young people, so people ages 19 to 24, and they help subsidize wages so folks can have a living wage job and get some really hands-on training, motivational interviewing. It's how we're going to get some folks to Homeboy Industries. It's through these relationships, not just inter-church relationships,
right,
interdenominational relationships, but actually listening to the folks in your community. And specifically in my context, because people of color are so disproportionately incarcerated, it's through partnering with stakeholders in Black Asheville that Deep Time has been able to exist. And it's just been remarkable to see the way that we've been received. We're seeing really quickly and clearly the fruit that's being born. But we have to face the reality that ministry is changing. What it means to be church is changing. I know that's the name of the podcast, but if the church wants to be a generative, sanctifying force in this world and cooperate with the Spirit, we're having to pay attention to what God's doing outside of the walls, or if it is inside the walls, in that old Sunday school classroom, like in the context of Deep Time, you know, on the psych ward, in the comic book store, in front of the Dollar General. How's God moving in those spaces? Because the Missio Dei isn't just about God already doing something in your church. It's God's already doing something across this whole world. But how do we slow down and center down and see what God's doing in our midst?
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, tell us some of the obstacles that you've encountered or that you're currently facing.
Yeah. I'm trying to discern how vulnerable I want to be. The greatest obstacle I faced was getting the church, Trinity United Methodist, to buy into the vision.
Mm.
It took almost a year of deliberation. It took some really, really hard conversations. But as Deep Times bubbled up, we've begun to see families showing up at the church and individuals. And the past six new folks we've welcomed into the church and have hung around and are singing in the choir and leading Fresh Expressions are all folks who have showed up because Deep Time's been involved with Trinity. So everything that was difficult was more rooted in a fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
This fear of what's going to happen to my building that I hold memories in? What's going to happen to my community that I've invested so much time into? But it, you know, trauma theory tells us that whenever we are in crisis, we can only see the now. But as a church, we have to look 10, 20, 100 years ahead. I might get in trouble for saying this, but most churches I've experienced are about where they should have been 20 years ago. So the joke that I keep telling folks, and it's a serious joke, so it's kind of in one side of my mouth and not in the other side, is I see my role in the community I'm in right now as, how can we get the church to be at least where it should have been 10 years ago instead of 20 years ago? how can we start there? And I don't when I say that, it's not a dig towards the church. I think community, especially salvific community, is just like beautiful and something that deserves to be rested in. But as the indigenous theologians say, indigenous African theologians say, we must look backwards in order to move forwards. We can't just rest in what once was. We have to use that to catalyze where we're headed.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, how would you counsel others who's thinking about maybe a similar kind of ministry?
Yeah.
What would you say to them?
Listen, listen, and listen. Everything that, every single centimeter of Deep Time is rooted in contextuality. We're paying attention to trends in the neighborhood. Yeah, it's tough, isn't it, Ellison? Trends in the neighborhood, which West Asheville has been woefully gentrified and is only becoming more and more and more gentrified. But Trinity is located between one of the largest housing projects in Asheville and one of the most robust, historically Black neighborhoods in Asheville. But when the narrative of West Asheville's brought up, it's always, oh, it's being gentrified, no one could live there anymore. So how are we paying attention again to these intersections where worlds collide and actually slowing down and listening? Again, all the scholars that mean anything to me, the theologians that mean anything to me, the pastors that mean anything to me, and Luke Edwards and Greg Ellison and Brian Combs and Dorothy Day and Howard Thurman, all of them emphasize listening. Don't jump to get your spatula and flip a burger for someone. Don't jump to throwing Band-Aids at someone or getting someone water. I mean, that's good if you're experiencing a dehydrated or injured or hungry person. But what's it look like to just rest in the relationships that happens when you encounter someone? That's how you can figure out how to do faithful ministry. It's not from just throwing spaghetti at a board and getting consensus. It's about what are the actual contextual needs where I'm at.
And it's trusting that the Spirit is going to show you that, and it's going to bubble up in community, as you say, you know?
Indeed, yeah. And that's where, again, Missio Dei, like, it can't be about you, and it has to be about mm-hmm. what God's already doing.
Yes.
So that's why, you know, it took me a little while to get here, but before Deep Time even conceived of a launch date, For about 7 months, we had what we called the Deep Time Think Tank. So we had all kinds of activities to envision what's needed, what's missing, who's missing around the table. It's through that we got community stakeholders involved. It's through that I got called out. It's like, you're this young, charismatic guy. We see this, but are you going to stick around? You know, those kinds of questions. And again, that's where, like, for me, it's I still... I'm an elder, but itinerancy still is a really, really tough thing for me to swallow, because mm-hmm. all the community development stuff that I read says, and the practitioners I've met say, yeah, you don't see anything good happening for until about the 10-year mark. that it takes 10 years for meaningful systemic change to happen.
Well, let's hope that the conference invests in you in that place for that kind of time.
Yeah, I don't mean to be too controversial, but I had to be sure to say that is what was brought into the room, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How do I, how does a Methodist pastor walk into a room of community stakeholders, housed and unhoused, newly returning citizens, long-term entrepreneurs, and tell them there's a good chance I could be moved this summer? That's tough. That's
yes.
Tough. But this is the kind of listening and trust building that you have in order to do this kind of ministry. That's my biggest wisdom. Don't jump into anything quickly. And I still have people who tell me, you know, Dustin, I don't know if a year was enough time. I think you might have started a little too early. But again, you noted how quickly things picked up with Deep Time, and it's been incredible. And that's still with us starting earlier than many folks would have liked us to. But the Spirit kept tugging. God stopped whispering and started yelling, and I couldn't stop bumping into Jesus around every corner I turned. So I trusted that through the guidance of discernment and Trinity United Methodist and, you know, their senior pastor, Nancy Dixon Walton, and just through what the community was saying, that starting when we did was right. And again, we've mostly seen fruit in our 1 year of existence. We've seen zero people return to incarceration who have received funds from us. So that's a big deal whenever we consider that recidivism statistic that I said earlier.
Yeah.
Well,
Dustin, thank you so much for sharing the beauty and the goodness of Deep Time with us. And how would somebody go about buying some of your delicious coffee?
Yeah.
Or finding out more about your ministry?
Yeah. So deeptimeavl.org is where you can buy our coffee. It's where you can connect with us. Our Instagram handle's the same, deeptimeavl. Those are the two main ways. You can email me. I'll make sure my email's in the show notes. I love making friends. I love building out community. So does GA. So does the rest of the team. It's just been dynamic. And I've already talked with some folks who have visions of social enterprise as ministry. I'd love to be in conversation with folks. DeepTimeAVL.org or at DeepTimeAVL on Instagram. That's the best way to get hold of us and buy coffee.
Okay. Well, we will make sure that all that is in the show notes.
Yeah.
As we leave today, can you provide a blessing for folks that might feel that nudge, just like you did, like, wow, God is working in me? And yeah, a blessing, Dustin.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to. Let us pray. God, at the start of creation, the waters were supposedly chaotic, but you reached out your hands and calmed them. The world that we live in today is filled with tumult and war, filled with poverty and addiction. It's filled with incarceration and hopelessness. But as we cast our eyes upon you, you're the one who constantly sets a lamp before us and lights our path. You're the one who points to the crack in the pavement and reveals to us a rose. You're the one who makes a way where we perceive no way. I give thanks for Deep Time, and I give thanks for churches changing. We praise you, God, for the gift of the reality that church is changing. May each of us, those who are listening, those who are communicating now, that we may have the clarity to say yes to what you are doing in our midst. The clarity to say yes to responding to the cries of the poor, to saying yes to listening out for those who are hurt in our midst, for saying yes to your church. A faithful church is a church that is changing. May we rest in the assurance that you are faithful and that you are here. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Dustin.
Yeah, thank you, Beth.
Church is Changing Podcast is a production of Discipleship Ministries, an agency of the United Methodist Church. Music is by Sanjay Singh. Visit all our podcasts at podcast.umcdiscipleship.org.